It's time for Mac Geek Gab, and listener Joe brings us our quick tip of the week with, ever wanted to have items and reminders be indented like shop at Lowe's versus at Ace? Sure, you could create a different note, but with a general shopping note, you could make things easier by having subtitles, as it were, right? Well, son of a gun, notes can do this. Who knew? All you do in iOS is slide an entry to the right, and a little indent area shows up. Tap it, and it's indented. Easy peasy. Who knows how to spell that anyway? More tips like this, plus your questions answered on Mac today's Mac Geek Gab number 1060 for Monday, October 21st, 2024.
Welcome to Mac Geek Gab, the show where you send in tips like that, and we share them. You send in your questions, we share them, and hopefully can provide some answers or at least some guidance. We honor the troubleshooting process here. You send in cool stuff found, we share that. We string it all together loosely into an agenda such that we are each perfectly set up to learn at least five new things every single episode. Our sponsor for today is 1Password.com/MGG. That's where you can learn all about 1Password Extended Access Management, which will solve all the problems that traditional IAM and MDM can't touch. We'll talk more about that in a little bit. For now, here in Durham, New Hampshire, I'm Dave Hamilton.
And here in South Dakota, I'm Adam Christensen.
And here also in New Hampshire, where it was a cool 28 degrees this morning, it's Pilot Pete. Ooh. Good to be back with you guys on show 1060, 1060 code for squad in the area. I guess we're your geek squad in the area today. And in some locations, it's also dead dog. So we will do our best not to kill your dog during this show.
No.
That's bad. Today also, October 21st. National Apple Day, which I thought was fitting.
Ooh. Right. We'll do some apple picking.
Well, or we'll do our own version of apple picking right here in the show. We'll pick things apart. We'll do it.
I at some point need to pick up a new iPad, I think.
Oh, it is the new iPad mini that just came out the thing for you?
No.
Okay.
No, I'm a full size iPad guy. I know I'm not an iPad like
Mondo.
What do they call the big one now? I want an iPad Pro, but 11-inch. I guess you just say 13-inch or 11-inch.
Yeah,
right?
That's what people. Yeah. That's generally what people say. Yeah.
I tried the big one way back when they first came out, and it was too huge.
Okay. Okay.
But yeah. I mean, I'm rocking, I don't even remember what generation my iPad is, to be honest with you. It's probably like a Gen 2?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Pro? Yeah. Pro Gen 2, I mean.
Wow. So will it run iPad OS 18 or no?
I don't know. It's a good question.
Okay. Yeah.
I haven't picked it up.
If only there was a show you could send that question into and ask.
You can tell how often I use it. I just pick it up and use it, and I watch things on it, and I haven't messed with it. And, recently, I don't know.
Yeah. The iPad's an interesting thing. I am not compelled to upgrade my iPad as routinely as I am most of my other devices. In fact, I think I upgrade my iPad less frequently than I upgrade my Mac. I don't know if that's true. Yeah. But it feels like that.
Well,
that's true for me, but only because work provides me one. So I use that one instead of another. But I loved that first iPad Pro when that first came out. I love that thing. I got the little magic keyboard that came with it and took notes. And that was a great machine. And now that they're all on, that was pre-Apple Silicon. So now that they're all on the same Apple Silicon chips, then I think we're going to. I may move more to that direction.
Yeah, the new, I'm an iPad mini person, so of course I was very happy this week when I saw that Apple gave some upgrade love to the iPad mini because, you know, I don't know how popular that device is. It's a weird size. I get it, you know, that it's not so much bigger than a phone that most people think, well, if I want an iPad like you, Adam, like I want the 11-inch. But I like the mini. It serves me well. I use older minis on stage. iPads are one of the things that I don't hand down to my family members. I just put them, they move from the house to the studio, and then they wind up going with me to gigs and things like that. And it's great. And the mini is usually perfect for me for gigs. But it's been interesting. In fact, speaking of which, I got to charge my iPads because I have gigs tonight.
We'll wait.
Yeah, it might be like, I'm trying to think, maybe you guys can talk while I go put them on charge. But like, I am not compelled to upgrade to the new iPad mini, even though my iPad mini 6 won't do the Apple Intelligence stuff, right? I know that. So maybe eventually once all of that really comes down the pipe, maybe I will want my iPad to be upgraded, but I don't know. The way that I use it, I think I can live with it the way that it is. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah. Novel. I know I'm going to have to when I retire, and I'll definitely go to the mini for use in the airplane.
In your plane, yeah.
Much better for charting and that sort of thing.
Sure.
And in fact, I know one gal who used her iPhone to cross the Atlantic Ocean instead of even a mini. So.
Wow.
That's terrifying enough, but to do it in a single engine reciprocating.
Yeah, that's a lot of time over water, isn't it? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
400 plus miles at a shot.
People did that before we even had iPhones. So
yes, they did.
You know.
They did it with a compass and a clock, baby.
Yeah, exactly. Well, not us.
No,
that's not how we roll. You want to take us to Bruce, back to Quick Tips?
Yes. I'm going to so do at this time as soon as I get notes pulled up. There we go, Bruce. Bruce writes in and he goes, guys, you mentioned in previous episodes that there was a website or URL you can go to that will essentially force your device to bring up the hotel Wi-Fi capture page. Can you mention it again? Thanks. And yeah, boy, nothing is more frustrating, right, when you get on a Wi-Fi at a hotel or an airport or something like that and somehow you miss or it never comes up. Here it is. It's neverssl.com, and if you like using Apple, then go to captive.apple.com. And essentially what that does, remember, is it forces it to go to an unencrypted page, because that's all sent in the clear, because everything is trying to default to the HTTPS encrypted.
The way I remember NeverSSL, or at least initially the way I remembered it, is... It, to your point, Pete, the problem...
Never secure socket.
Well, but the problem is those captive portals, which are the sort of, you know, redirect pages that you get when you go to a hotel or a public Wi-Fi that you have to sign into, they're generally not actually redirect pages. What they are is they steal the DNS... They route the DNS to the wrong place intentionally. So if you were trying to go to, you know, www.google.com, if that's what your browser was going to bring you to, it's going to think it went to google.com, but what's going to be displayed is this splash page because of this essentially hijacking. I mean, it's intentional hijacking.
Because you have to agree to their terms or put in, you know,
But in order to do it, they hijack it, and instead of delivering you google.com, they deliver you their web page. And the problem is, if your browser was going to google.com, it was going there at HTTPS, the secure version of Google, and your browser will choke on this and say, whoa, this doesn't have the same security certificate that matches google.com, and so I'm not going to let you go there. And everything just stops. So you need to visit some page that is not secure so that when this hijacking happens, it actually works. Because in this one case... You want the hijacking to happen. And that's why never SSL is the right thing, because that page will never be SSL. And that's a good thing.
Right.
So that's why this works. And that's sort of how I remember it in my head. I don't know. Nice. I thought maybe the background would be good for people.
No, absolutely.
Yeah. So that's why. Right. I don't know. I guess I'm bringing us to Todd after I ranted there. Now it's my turn. I gotta bring us things. I have no idea where I am. So Todd reminds us, tells us, he says, I use an Apple MagSafe Duo charger by my bed. And before iOS 18, my iPhone screen would go black shortly after putting the iPhone on the charger. Now it dims, but still shows the time and bottom buttons, which is annoying while trying to sleep. My phone is in do not disturb focus mode when I sleep, but I couldn't find a fix in those settings. Someone in Discord suggested that I adjust the standby setting, but that only applies when the iPhone is on its side and mine is flat. I solved it by creating two shortcuts to toggle always on display and set automations to activate them when do not disturb turns on and off. Works perfectly. Oh, that's smart. I like that. Mm-hmm. Okay. I have another idea, though. Why not just put your phone in sleep mode, which will then let it dim the screen? I mean, I think that's what sleep mode's for. So,
right? Okay.
I don't know.
But that just dims, though, right?
No, sleep mode turns off the screen, or at least it did on my 15 Pro with iOS, okay. The iOS betas. Yeah. I mean, if I tap it, it'll wake up, but it doesn't leave it on all night in sleep mode for me. Am I misremembering?
No. I don't know. I have this bad habit now of, I think I mentioned this on a previous show, because this is how I found out that YouTube will play hour and a half long ads. If you there's people that are as an ad on YouTube doing their entire podcast, like an episode will just come on. And I think it's because I watch long form, like 2-3 hour long Minecraft streams in the middle of the night, or I don't watch them. I turn them on. I put my phone face down and I listen.
Oh, interesting.
To the audio, basically, as I'm falling asleep. So I listen to the audio of these shows, but I'll wake up sometimes in the middle of the night and it'll be like, what the frick is this? It's like some weird, like total podcast I would never, ever listen to. Right. And it's like, I pick it up and it's like, how did it get on this? And it's like, no, it's actually running an ad.
Oh, interesting.
Like an hour long ad. It's crazy.
Yeah. Huh.
That's rude.
Huh. That must be their way to boost listens.
I thought it was genius. I thought it was like genius. Yeah. Like we should get in on this action.
Yeah. If it's cheap. Right. Sure. We can pretend we have more listeners
in the middle of someone's YouTube video, you know, right in the middle.
Right in the middle.
You can skip. It's got the skip, you know, it's skip button, so you can go back to your show. But yeah,
huh. We should. Well, not for that reason, because that's misleading at best. But like, if YouTube ads are that inexpensive, we should take our we chop this show up. I say we, Sadie does it for us. Chops the show up into like little snippets and segments, and we put that out as like YouTube Shorts. Those might be good things for us to actually pay to advertise and spread the word about the show. I don't know.
Maybe, yeah.
Look into that.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
Just interesting thing. Huh. But yeah, so I don't know if it goes to sleep, back to the sleep mode thing. It is in sleep mode, but I'm always playing something, so I won't remember.
Right.
But I have a tip for you guys.
Yeah, go.
This actually came up because I'm watching YouTube videos, the irony in the lead-in. So occasionally, and this will be controversial probably in this community, I watch Linus Tech Tips on YouTube. And Linus finally went back after years to daily driving an iPhone because he was kind of excited about some of the new features and wanted to try some things out. And so he went on a long rant. He had a lot of complaints. I think some of them valid, obviously some of them probably not valid. And one of his complaints was about the keyboard on iOS, because I guess on Android, a lot of the keyboards are more, the on-screen keyboard for the phone is more like your typical keyboard where you'll have the alternate characters like above the key. So like if you look at, you know, the number row on your keyboard and you want to know where the at symbol is, it's above 2, right? He's like, on iOS, it's annoying because some of the special punctuation is like 3 layers deep. You have to like tap, 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 you know, which I think is valid, right? Because on the Android, you just press and hold on the two, and then you can, it turns to the at symbol and you tap it, you know, or you let go and it goes, apparently. So I'm not an Android user, but that's what he was kind of talking about. So somebody pointed out, well, you can save a little bit on iOS if you tap and hold on the 1, 2, 3, which brings up the, you know, secondary keyboard, and then just swipe to the character you want. And then when you let go, it'll automatically return back to the main keyboard.
Man, it does. That's awesome.
What?
That's cool. Yeah. All right. It's kind of like the whole.
So then you don't have to tap that button, you know, twice. You don't have to tap to get to that keyboard, tap the character, then tap to go back to the alphas, right?
Yeah. This is you.
That's a double bill.
You folks need to try this. Like it. There's a lot of these things that it's like, oh, that, like, oh, I see. Okay, sure. But this, like, it makes all the sense. Wow. Huh. That saves me two taps. Like, it brings it from three taps to one. Wow.
Yeah. Because my favorite is, you know, I overuse the ellipses.
Okay.
The three periods in a row, like nobody's business. And so, yeah, I would have to go to punctuation and then hit it three times and then, you know, back to letters. Whereas this one, if you just hold down the 1, 2, 3, slide over the period, and after a couple seconds, the ellipses comes up and let go of it, and you're back to your letters.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Huh. You too can abuse the ellipses, folks.
That's right. Oh, so wait.
I abuse them all the time.
I want to see. So if I do that, oh, yeah. Oh, look at that. Huh.
Yeah.
All right. I like this.
Now, the only bummer is you can't get, I don't think you can get the two layers deep, but, you know, to the secondary special characters keyboard.
Right. You're right. You'd need to, so you'd have to hit that one. But it does work. The same tip works if you tap the 1, 2, 3 to bring up that keyboard, like tap and release, and then hold on the special one with pound plus equals, you can drag over to something on that and it will revert you to the numbers keyboard. So
back to the numbers. But I mean, often what you're probably wanting to get back to though is
the alphabet, you know, keyboard.
The trick here, and that was his point on Android, they just have all of those above they, you know, double put on every key, every alpha key. And so not, you know, and this isn't because a lot of people were like, well, you can tap and hold on the, on the N and then you get all the like accented characters. He's like, no, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about all the, you know, extra punctuation characters like tilde and, you know, slash and backslash and, you know, all of those things.
Yeah.
Huh. Square brackets. Curly brackets.
All right, we got to stop. I got to stop playing with this. Folks,
it's a tip.
It's a great tip. Yeah. Wow.
Oh,
all right.
Man.
Good stuff. Andrew says, I learned a few things about networking over the weekend trying to fix an issue where AirPlay 2 from my Mac Mini, iPhone, and or iPad to various HomePods Gen 2 and HomePod Minis and Sonos devices would drop out on my network from time to time. I'm running on an Orbi, but I don't think that matters here. Some Google foo and Reddit foo recommend reserving the IP address for all of my AirPlay devices, so all AirPlay 2 devices, so audio and video devices, which, of course, can be done through my Orbi's web interface. I did that, and so far, so good. He says, I also have a Sonos system with a Beam 2, a Sub Mini, and two IKEA Symphonisk speakers as rears, but only one IP address for Sonos was showing on my router. That's because Sonos only shows one IP when devices are grouped, and he has all of those grouped as one speaker in the living room or one set of speakers in the living room. If you want to reserve a port for all or an IP address for all four items, you ungroup them, reserve it, and then one by one regroup. Yeah, it's because they won't get IP addresses. They effectively become part of SonosNet, and only the primary device is on your, directly on your network. But yeah, I have seen this issue with AirPlay 2, and the idea of setting up DHCP reservations so that your AirPlay 2 devices aren't necessarily jumping to different IPs all the time could make a difference. I said that this wasn't necessarily an Orbi issue. I might come back to it and say it is, or not, well, some routers do a calculation, like a hashing almost, of the hardware address of the Wi-Fi device or of the Ethernet device when deciding what DHCP address to assign. Like the Synology, for example, if available, will always give the same IP address to the same device because it does a hash on its MAC address and calculates something that matches. I don't know what its lookup table is built like, but it will try and it by doing that, give the same IP address to the same device, even if it hasn't been on for a couple of days. Again, so long as something else doesn't already have that address. And what's nice about that is you sort of get the benefit of a DHCP reservation without having to go in and do DHCP reservations. I've recently moved to the Unify router that I mentioned. I don't know if that does it. I haven't bothered to look, but I know Synology was doing it. And I think others might do similar things, but the Orbi clearly does not. It just kind of goes in order and gives IP addresses out. And that will cause things to change. And the Orbi isn't alone. Many other routers do that. I was surprised, pleasantly surprised when I saw the Synology. It was like, oh, they must be doing something here. That's interesting. I don't know what they're doing, but they're doing something. So, but yeah, any devices that you are airplaying to, I would zoom that out actually and say any device that you are connecting to on a regular basis. So AirPlay being one of the things, but if you have a server in your house or even if you're screen sharing often to one of your Macs, I would argue in all of those cases, that's a good reason for a DHCP reservation, meaning that they get the same IP address every time. Because if your Mac has, or iPhone or whatever you're trying to connect from, has that old address cached in it or whatever, it's just going to cause some headaches. Or even if, you know, if you're connecting via Safari, say, to some server engine on something, you know, if you're like, oh, no, it's not at .43, it's at .92 now. I gotta go change that. Like, why bother? Just set a reservation and you're good to go. One additional piece of advice about DHCP reservations. Let's say your network range is 192.168.1.x, right? And so your router is usually at .1.1. And then, generally speaking, it'll start assigning addresses from .2 on upward. It could, on most networks, it could go from .2 or from .1 to .254. 255 is reserved as the broadcast address. We won't touch that one. What I often do is set my DHCP range on a network like that to be, say, from .100 to .254. And then my reservations, and I know this is going to sound counterintuitive, but believe me when I'm telling you this, my reservations are all pre-100, and that's so that the DHCP server doesn't randomly assign two things to the same address. It shouldn't, but there's no reason to fight that battle. The DHCP server will assign, let's say I reserve .20 for my Mac, right? So my range is from .100 to .254, and then I tell it, reserve this for .20 for my Mac. It will still hand out .20 to my Mac, even though it's not part of the range, because the range is for all the other devices. And by separating it out, your life can be better. I hope I'm explaining that well. Am I making any sense to at least you two and the folks in the chat?
Because I do the same. I do something very similar. I get even more crazy about it. I got even more crazy about it when I did it. And I then took ranges and assigned the DHCP reservations by like type of device. So I gave all my Macs are in 40 range, right? And all my iOS devices are in another range, and my Sonos devices are in another range, and my networking gear is in another range, and my IoT devices are.
I think that's smart. It makes sense to me. I did the same thing because I have a spreadsheet that's called home IP addresses. And if I lose that,
and a note.
Oh, yeah, okay.
I have a note that I sync.
Oh, yeah. That's smart. Yeah, my spreadsheet is synced so that it's always on all of my devices all the time if I ever need to look it up. And in it, I keep the name of the device, of course, the IP address, and the MAC address of it. So that if I...
Yeah, in the what's the network identifier you can give it to? Like, I use that, too, on the DHCP reservation.
Oh, like a name, you mean?
Yeah, there's like an ID. I'd have to go look in networking because I can never remember what it's called. But yeah, where you can like give it an actual name that'll show up.
That'll
in
show
some
up
places.
Yeah. Yeah. A DNS name or local DNS or something.
Yeah. It's part of exactly.
Interesting. My method is slightly different, so I don't have to write it down. I don't worry about all of it. But for instance, things like the printer and the Synologies and all that, they get .1.1 through 10. And my wife gets 11 through 20. I get 21 through 30. My daughter gets 31 through 40. My son gets 41 through 50. And then I let everything else go above the 50s. So I know that my, for instance, my son's iPhone is on .1.41.
I like that. So you're assigning by people as opposed to device category. Yeah, it makes sense. Sure.
And then the hard things, I leave. What's the word I'm looking for? It isn't the hard things. It's the things that I know I want to be able to get to. The Synology drive.
Yeah.
The Mac Mini. Yeah, the servers, that sort of thing. For some reason, I've not done it with the Apple TVs. I've just let them go. But it airplane to those always seems to work just fine anyway.
Okay. I've had issues airplaying to Apple TVs over the years. So, and I think this might be part of why. So, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. But intermittent issues. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. We ready to move from networking some photo tips? So Alex says this, and I'm going to try and do this right, but if I mess it up, I'm just going to let you know. It's a little bit tricky how he wrote this, but I think it was clever. Alex says, it's common knowledge that it's possible to manually reorganize the order of the photos in an album in Photos app via press, hold, and drag. And it's only me who hasn't realized this until today, isn't it?
It's not only Alex. I didn't know you could do that.
Oh, I knew. I thought this came up recently on the show, but maybe I'm remembering back to my own show. The only thing I can't remember about this trick, because I do this on some albums, I think, don't pin me on this, but I think if you then reorganize that album, like choose to reorganize it by like name or date, I don't think it retains your manual sorting. So like you can't go back to manual. It, like once you've reordered it, you're going to have to reorder. So be careful with this. If you carefully manually organize your album, you now can only manage it manually. If you want to like sort that by date or sort that by name, you'll lose all of that manual sorting and you're going to have to redo it.
Yep. Makes sense. Makes sense. All right, Pete. Perfect. You want to take us to Todd?
I'm going to take us to Todd. Yeah, Todd wrote in, and you know, I have the same thing, and I haven't done it yet, but I'm going to fix it today. I was just thinking about this morning, going, I need to get rid of all these stinking reminders that keep showing up in my calendar. He says, I use time reminders a lot, and throughout the day, I use, hey, yes, lady, remind me at 1 p.m. today to do XYZ. Says this saves me each and every day from missing something important. But what I do need is all those reminders, or what I do not need is all those reminders in my calendar. macOS Sequoia and iOS 18 added them, and it took me a bit of time to figure out how to turn them off. On the Mac, in the calendar app, under the View menu, select Show Calendar List. On the left, list your calendars. Toward the bottom, under Other, uncheck Scheduled Reminders. Mm-hmm. On the iOS calendar app, bottom center, tap Calendars, and at the bottom of the list, under Other, uncheck Scheduled Reminders. Teach their own, but I feel at peace with them out of my calendar. I also, Todd, feel at peace with those reminders not hitting my calendar. The reminder is all I need. I don't need a calendar item to hit. So
yeah, that's interesting. I've never
yeah
yeah yeah
Yeah, I've noticed it coming up in the calendars lately, and I'm kind of like, I don't really want that there. Because, for instance, this is going to sound a little morbid, but I try to send a card or a text or something to somebody on the anniversary of them having lost somebody important in their life.
Okay.
And for instance, tomorrow is the 16th anniversary of my father-in-law's passing. So I want to make sure I could do something for my wife. She doesn't need to see on my kit because she has access to my calendar.
Yeah.
She doesn't need to see that that's how I do it. But
yeah. Right. Yeah. So, sometimes you don't want to know how the sausage is made. That's right.
Right. Right. You just want to taste the sausage and enjoy
it. That's it.
Or in Zoe's case, the bacon.
Right. That's right. Yeah. That's
right. There's bacon people. There's sausage people. Sausage people are wrong.
I mean, you know, when given the choice between the two. Yeah. Obviously. Kurt shares.
Kurt has,
Yeah. You want to go?
Yep. Yeah, so here's what Kurt says. Kurt says, hi, in MGG 1058, you offered advice at about 55 minutes into the show to the listener who had a failing drive. You made the sensible suggestion that if one manages to get the drive spinning, your first and only priority should be to get the data off the drive. However, sometimes that can be difficult with Finder, as it will abort if and when it enters and encounters a, when it encounters, excuse me, a drive error. The best method, I think, is to drop into the terminal and use the utility rsync. I'm away from the computer, so I can't give you the exact command screen, but rsync can be configured to keep going and push on, regardless of any errors that it encounters. I think Unix copy CP will also ignore errors. Finally, if your disk is spinning but also has many errors, there is a Linux utility called ddrescue. You'll have to boot into some flavor of Linux and have a second drive to serve as a destination clone, but it can work wonders. It will read all the blocks that it can read from the source without error, and then go back and repeatedly try to read the bad blocks until it manages to get the data off. It employs some tricks like seeking to the bad track from each side. Disk wizard stuff like that.
Ooh. Huh. Does DD rescue, does that exist on the Mac?
I bet you probably could install it through Homebrew, would be my guess.
I'm trying right now, yeah. Brew install DD rescue. Let's see what happens. I did a witch DD rescue from the terminal, which would tell me if there was one there. And in fact,
you can also just do...
I did, and there was not. So there wasn't one built into Mac OS. However, I did brew install DD rescue, and it just installed on my Mac. And so let me make sure it's the same DD rescue. Data recovery tool. It copies data from one file or block device to another, trying to rescue the good parts first in case of read errors. Yep. Wow. Oh, that's good. All right. Huh. Cool. Have either of you used DD Rescue? I don't. This is my
I have not.
Interesting. No. Huh. Fun. Cool stuff.
I'm trying to think. I think there's a command for brew where you can just have it. Yeah. Brew cask search.
Okay.
And then the app name.
Oh, really?
So you wouldn't have to install it.
Yep. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, it says brew cask is no longer a brew command. Use brew command dash dash cask. So maybe that's not the one. Is there brew search? Is it just that simple? Yes. Maybe in fact, it is just simple. Brew search. And then I put DD
there
rescue.
Yep.
Yep. There you go. Good stuff. All right, folks. You know those nice brick paths on a college campus? They're like your company's well-behaved IT-approved devices and apps. Neat, tidy, predictable. But... we all know that people aren't walking the brick paths. No way. They're cutting through the grass, taking the shortcuts. Those are your unmanaged devices, shadow IT apps, and contractors sneaking around like they're late to class. And most security tools, they only protect those happy little brick paths. But the real chaos is happening in the grass, where things can go very wrong. That's where 1Password Extended Access Management, our sponsor, comes in. It's like hiring a digital park ranger to track down every rogue device, app, and identity on those shortcuts. It ensures every user credential is strong, every device is healthy, and every app is visible. It is security for the way we actually work today, where shortcuts are the norm. No more guessing who's using what. You'll know. Don't get caught with your data running wild on the grassy shortcuts. Check out 1Password Extended Access Management at 1Password.com/MGG. That's 1Password.com/MGG. The number 1Password.com/MGG. Keep your company on the safe path, and our thanks to 1Password for sponsoring this episode. All right. Shall we go to our this isn't necessarily music, but something for the Don't Get Caught segment. There you go. So somebody sent that in years ago. I keep it around, you know. So
there you go.
Yipper.
And first up is Jurgen this week. He says, "Hi guys, this is my story. May it serve others not to make the same mistake. Up until 2020, I was using Apple Music to sync music to the cloud, my music to the cloud. I had lots of problems with the last played field, so I stopped syncing to the cloud. Since then, I have ripped all of my CDs and added them to my local collection. Many thousand songs. So, I was in need for an additional backup to my local backup. Since the collection is large, I thought switch on sync with the cloud was the solution. Boy, was I wrong. After a long time, the process finished and I took a look at my library. Was I stupid in thinking Apple would just mirror my current library to the cloud? It certainly did not. Instead, the old cloud status was taken as the new current status. The good news, it seems, is I haven't lost any of the since 2020 newly added songs, but all the other songs that got their metadata from 2020. Now I have a library with outdated data, covers, the last played ratings, and the list goes on. So if you ever turned on syncing and turned it off, think twice about turning it on again, Jurgen." And I was like, "Oof, that is a classic don't get caught if ever I heard one." Any pre-solution to that, Dave? I would think a complete backup to a local drive or something, and then...
Yeah, I mean, the solution would be for like Apple to build it to ask you, "Hey, you have old data out here. Do you want to merge with your old data or replace your old data?" In lieu of Apple doing that, I think the solution would be to start with a blank music library, right? If you know that you have not synced in years and now you want to start again, knowing what we know from Jurgen, start with a blank music library. You can just create a fresh one. You don't have to delete the one that you currently have.
Yeah.
Create a fresh one, turn on syncing with that, and then let it do whatever it's going to do, and it's probably going to take a little while. And then in that blank library, erase everything. Wipe it all out. That will push that wipe up to the cloud, hopefully erasing everything that's in the cloud. Then when you go to sync, then, you know, quit that, switch to the other library, change to the cloud, make a backup in case it decides to honor what you just did in the cloud and erase everything in your local library. But hopefully it won't do that. And hopefully it'll just let you push everything up to the cloud. The only other thing I could think of is call AppleCare first and say, "Hey, can you wipe my music library in the cloud so that I can start fresh?" And is it possible that, I know that Mac wasn't syncing since 2020, but did you have another device that was? Like, is your phone syncing? I don't know. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. That's a tricky one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But good advice. Don't just assume it's going to do what you want it to do.
Well, I guess the advice is, because I'm sure there are some people who have seen exactly this work just fine, right? And do what they expected it to do, or at least thought it did what they expected it to do.
Right.
I think the advice is back up your music library before you turn on syncing.
You should have that anyway. So yeah,
right. But that was the thing, is he turned this on because he wanted a backup and thought this would be a great, you know, free backup. I gotta stop hitting this microphone.
Do we want to get into those semantics again?
No. No, sir.
Oh boy.
I just, so anybody who doesn't know, my opinion is syncing is not a backup. Just like syncing to iCloud.
I agree with you right up until the point that syncing has versioning. And once syncing has versioning, it does become a backup.
Fair. That's fair. I'll accept that. Yeah.
There's an asterisk. That's all. But in general, like, just sync is not backup. Only,
and I just say that often because the number of stories throughout the years that I've heard from people that are syncing, whatever, you know, we're talking music here, but it could be photos, it could be your calendar, it could be your contacts, it could be whatever. The number of times I've heard from people like, I turned on syncing and everything got messed up.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yes.
That's why I feel it's not a backup because it can go wrong. Whereas if I point in time, like you said, and this is where the versioning comes in, point in time, I say, I want a copy of this over here. Nothing else is touching this over here. Something can happen. This thing here, I can go back to that thing there.
Yep.
Yeah. So.
Agree. Yep. I agree. I agree. Absolutely. Todd. Oh, Todd is me. It woe is me. All right. Speaking of backing up, Todd says, syncing, right? I created a shared folder called Recipes in Notes and shared it with my wife a number of years ago. We were cooking an onion soup, and I highlighted two lines of the directions so I knew where we were in that note. My wife sat down at her computer and accidentally hit a key on the keyboard. She did not notice for about 5 minutes or so, and by then we could not recover via undo. She accidentally deleted this note. It hit me like a ton of bricks. How would I recover lost notes? A complete restore from Time Machine? I did not get caught, as I had an older iPhone still syncing all my iCloud data that miraculously I had turned off the previous day. I turned that on and immediately put it into airplane mode so it didn't have a chance to sync. I found the unaltered version of the recipe note and duplicated it and then let it sync and everything was okay. But I was amazed to see that there is no easy way to get all of my notes out of the Notes app. Export to PDF or Pages, but one at a time. Yes, I did some Googling and found an article about a comprehensive guide for backing up notes on your Mac, and we'll put a link to that. But there's not a great option for backing up notes from your Mac. You can back up the Notes folder. But that is, you know, it's a SQLite database is essentially what's in that folder for notes. And so you'd have to just replace the whole thing. And that could get wonky with syncing and all that stuff. And then, of course, there's Time Machine. But I know.
The problem with non-document based apps on the Mac, you know, they don't qualify for like the Time Machine versioning thing because you've got to restore the whole like database.
Yes. But the thing is, it's a database. Like in theory, someone could write a utility to go in to the SQLite database and like save out all your notes individually and allow you to migrate certain ones back in or out, or maybe even just save them off as, I don't know, RTFD files or something, so that
I mean, with notes you actually, I mean, you could go in and use a tool like there's a bunch of database viewers, and there's a few I think on SetApp for opening SQLite, you know, WYSIWYG kind of things. So you could go find that library file in Time Machine, right?
Yep.
Restore a copy of it somewhere and then peruse through it and cherry pick out what you're looking for. Wouldn't be fun.
No, no.
You'd be spending some time, but you could do it.
But you could do it. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like, yeah. Yeah, what's interesting.
Could at least get the data back. You can't, I don't think there's a real easy way unless you know what you're doing to like then take that and insert it back into the database. That'd be a little hairy, I think, but.
Well, so that's the interesting part is I can go into Notes and I can export, and this is in the Apple Notes app. I can export as PDF. But if I export as a PDF, when I choose import to notes, I can certainly import a PDF, I would think, but it's going to bring it back in as a PDF, not as the note that it was. So there's no way to export and re-import and keep the format the same.
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah. That's not the best, Apple. Not the best. Like I'm thinking of Contacts, you know, formerly Address Book.
Yeah.
That'll export as a whatever it is, the contact file. I can't remember the format because I've got this whatever man flu thing going on. But I don't know. Like, you can export it as whatever that is, the VCF, and then import the VCF, and it comes back in the same way. So, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I can't remember that, but I can remember that pre-show, Pete, I asked you if you could spatchcock a jackalope.
And you know what my answer was, Dave. Just don't get caught.
That's right. That's right. Yep. But can you?
Like, hey, this is important. Hey, okay. This is a clean show, Dave.
Okay.
A clean show.
That's right. You want to save us from wherever I'm taking us?
Stop it. Yes, I'm going to do that at this time. So first thing I'm going to do is, for those watching on Discord, I just posted the photos, and they should be coming up momentarily. But Andrew writes in with his journey on Apple's Time Machine, and to Adam's point a few minutes ago that syncing is not a backup, this is what Andrew's doing, and man, I like it. My journey on Apple's Time Machine. Since day one in 2007, I've used Apple's Time Machine. In the 17 years since, I've had a handful of occasions where I've done full restores with it, more so in the days of spinning drives. Nonetheless, it's a habit. Good habit to be in, everybody. I used Apple's Time Capsules for years. First the squat one, then the tower one. I retired this machine 2 years ago after moving to Netgear Orbi for mesh networking. Then I switched to a Synology disk station, but this was a bag of hurt with Time Machine. I will concur that it's not the easiest thing to set up, but once you do, it's nice. Back to the note. It kept dropping out and requiring reconnection. I gave up and resold it at a loss. Man, I'm sorry to hear that because I love my Synologies. But I digress. Again, I still wanted some form of Time Machine with my Mac Mini. So in the most recent Amazon sale, I got some Samsung 2 terabyte SSDs. Nice. I grabbed one for Time Machine and it works perfectly. I also have two old Samsung 500 gigabyte T5, which I run as a carbon copy cloner backups at 2 a.m. each morning. One drive is used for a month and then goes off site and is swapped out with another drive, and a month later, the rotation again. This works perfectly. So where do you put these small drives? I Velcroed them to the back of my monitor, and that's what's working just fine. And rather than take up USB-C ports on the Mac, I grabbed a Satechi 4-port USB-C hub, which moves data only at 5 gigabits per second, but that's just fine for backups. So,
wow, that's pretty good.
That is good, and it's a relatively being the keyword cheap solution for doing the backups.
I wonder. Yeah, I wonder how, like, it would heat be an issue to, like, melt the Velcro glue off of there or something over time. I don't know.
Huh. Apparently it's
probably
not
if you get that industrial Gorilla Velcro tape or whatever. Like, that, they have stuff that's meant for, like, that you'll never get it off your monitor or your drive ever again.
Right.
Yeah. Well, there's that, right? And there's the glue I use when I need something I'm certain never going to get out. It's called E6000. And I think that thing will survive on the surface of the sun. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's amazing glue.
So. How hot do you, I mean, monitors probably don't get hot.
And no.
Like, well, but this the was drives
to,
can
is this
get
to the
hot,
back of his
though,
monitor
right?
or to his iMac?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. Okay.
Back of his monitor.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't know if there's any issues with that sort of thing going on.
Yeah.
And the Velcro might act as somewhat of an insulator.
Right.
You think.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Because it would. So, it does give you an air gap. Right.
Sure. Well, I was more thinking the Velcro. Just because it's a fabric-y material would.
Yep.
Kind of prevent heat dissipation.
Oh, the Velcro.
That, you know, where you're the heating up and falling off. So.
Yeah. But where the Velcro is, yes, is an insulator. But otherwise, you get an air gap between the disc and the monitor.
The rest of the drive.
The rest of it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Huh.
So here's a product someone can make for me. I've thought about trying to figure out some 3D printed thing or something like that. So I have all my, I have 3.5-inch drives, not the little 2.5-inch drives, but like external USB-C drives. They're all about the same size and shape. They're not exactly the same size and shape. But I've often wanted some sort of, I just have them set on my desk, you know, next to each other, and I hate it. And I'm like, I've wanted somebody who would make or design like a rack, like a little tiny shelf system for those drives, you know, that just stacks up and can maybe be expandable. And I'm like, there's got to be a product like that. I've never found one, you know, that's like ideal.
Does 12 so, South make anything? I feel like they're the company.
They had the back. They had the what they called the. Do they call it the backpack or whatever?
Back
the little shelf
or whatever. Yeah, the shelf. Yeah,
it was a shelf that you could put on the back of your iMac. I think it even locked into the little cable management hole. I think it kind of clipped in there and then created a shelf out the back of your.
Yeah,
iMac. From I think I remember. And
yeah,
then
you it
was could
set
your drives
iMac,
on that.
Right. Yeah.
But this is more. I want like a rack, almost like you know they make them for. You can get like an enclosure for, you know, internal drives that you stack up. But like, I just want like a little. They need to be little small shelves that are just stackable. Dr. Dream says use Legos. Yeah, you could build one with Legos.
Oh,
I could
sure
also
could.
Figure out a 3D printed thing for something like that. But yeah, I'm surprised they're not some commercial product.
Yeah.
Where you could just kind of stack them up and have them vertical. Because you don't want to set them on top, you know, because I've often thought about setting them on top of each other, but then you're going to get heat. So you don't want that.
Yeah.
All right. I digress.
Yeah. I've been digressing.
We got a lot
too.
More stuff to get
we
to.
Have a
I'd,
lot
I'd like
more
to get
stuff.
To that conversation about Vision Pro.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. Fun. Great. You want to take us to Joe quickly, Pete?
Yeah. So Joe has another one that this one's pretty long, but it will get through thoroughly. Guys, I have a PSA for the listeners towards the end. He says, I just got my iPhone 16 Pro Max and been having issues getting my backup of my iPhone 14 Pro Max onto the 16. I used the out-of-the-box approach Apple builds into the phone to start, but then it hung when asking for a confirmation number supposed to send to my old 14, which I never got. App support really wasn't helpful, but at least I got to where my eSIMs were transferred using the new device mode versus from the backup on the other phones. And if you're Mint Mobile, you have to do this anyway. You don't get your eSIMs transferring over. Once I got the 16 at least running, I pulled it into my Mac 2017 MacBook Pro running the latest Ventura, but the phone never apparently paired with the Mac, and the 16 will simply not mount on the Mac. My 14 will no problem. Interestingly, iMazing did not work as it never sees the iPhone 16 Pro Max. Although I do have solid backups of the 14 from Finder backup and iMazing backup. I have two PSAs for don't get caught. Number one, with iPhone storage getting larger and larger, it seems nearly impossible to get the backup an iPhone to internal storage on an SSD Mac. Apple should make it obvious with a button to back up to a different external location, but they do not. The solution so far anyway seems to be to create a link via the terminal using the command ln space dash s to link the to link it. I won't go into the whole path of that.
Sure.
Experience suggests that it makes though to make it a local connected drive and not to a NAS, as it'll probably drop the link, which makes sense. Assuming you have a large drive anyway, this now solves that problem, presumably forever. PSA number two, apparently Apple in their wisdom assumed that anyone buying a new iPhone 16 must be running the latest Mac OS 2. Even on the Apple discussion forums, Apple support is basically telling folks this. Really, how stupid can it be for Apple, for goodness sake, to using a brand new Apple USB-C to USB-C cable directly to the MacBook Pro USB-C port? The 16 will not mount. The Apple forum said replacing it with a USB-A to USB-C cable via a hub would bypass the issue, but in fact, it does not for me anyway. With their cable, with either cable, the 16 starts charging, so something is detected, but the PSA is do not buy an iPhone 16 if you are not running the latest Mac OS. I'm like, So my thoughts in there first were, remember the old Sanuti, which was iTunes running, or spelled backwards. I thought, you know, something along those lines. So I looked around and I found, where is it? I've lost it in my notes here. Well, let me back up. I'll get to that recommendation here in a minute. The first thing I'm wondering is, if it won't mount, did he bypass the trust settings? Because I had this happen to me. Yeah, you know, trust this computer. And if you accidentally hit no, or if you somehow didn't see that screen and bypassed it, now your computer won't trust it and vice versa. So you can reset it by going into central settings, general, transfer or reset iPhone, and then reset location and privacy on your phone. That'll reset any trust settings so that when you plug it in again, it'll go, hey, do I trust this device? And then you can go,
I'll put that in there. I'll put that path in the show notes so that people can follow it. But yeah, settings, general, transfer, reset, and then reset location and privacy. Okay. Yep.
Yeah. Cause, I know somebody very well who recently experienced this.
Sure. Whoops. No, it's great. Yeah. That's great. Interesting. Yeah.
So that may have been, I was just having trouble mounting. It wouldn't mount. And once I got to that, it worked. So hopefully that's a simple problem, but or the simple solution to the problem. But then the other one was the ancient program in tech terms, Sanuti. And I'm like, that's probably not an option. And I'm shocked that iMazing didn't work. But I found imobi.com. That's I-M as in Mike, O-B as in Bravo, I-E.com has a program called AnyTrans. And it purports to be able to mount and access your phone. It looks like there's a free download and some pay options in there as well. But I'm wondering if AnyTrans may be an option for you to try as well.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'm assuming that Joe doesn't have his 14 Pro Max, because, of course, then you could just transfer over the air or use the free iCloud temporary storage to do this if you had enough bandwidth for that to be feasible.
Transferring Bluetooth over the air phone to phone takes an hour or two.
Yeah. But I mean, faster than whatever he's going through.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sometimes I know that delay. Because I'm always, whenever I see that delay, I'm like, oh, it's going to take an hour. Like, oh, there's got to be a faster way. It's like, yeah, but Dave, how long is it going to take you to set that faster way up? And what's the headache going to be? This one has already begun. And it's the same logic that I used to use with clients, like working on a machine, Windows, especially back in the day, and I'm rewinding back, 20 plus years, where, we would try three or four things to solve whatever the problem was. And it was like, okay, look, we can keep looking for the needle in this haystack, or we can rebuild the haystack. And one of those has a known time associated with it, whereas the other one could be much shorter or much longer, and we don't get to know until we're at the end. And so,
depending on how long, you may never know.
You may never know, right?
The world may never know.
Well, there were times back in the old days where I would have to tell people, and this was, when processors were much slower, and we were doing everything off of floppy drives, which were also slow. And it was like, look, you need to factor my time into this, because people were paying, dollars per hour. Yeah. Sometimes it was cheaper to buy a new computer than it was to pay me to fix the old one. And just in terms of the amount of time that it was going to take, it's like, look, I this is just the reality.
I'm happy to help.
Yeah, I'm happy to help, but the dollars for donuts, you're going to be better off if you buy a new computer versus paying me to dig in and fix this one for you.
Yeah.
You want me to spend a day of my time, or do you want to be, and then you have your same old computer. And of course, this was at a time when Moore's Law was like, you know, raging, and it was every 18 right. months, CPUs doubled in speed. So it's like, you could pay me the same amount of money that you spend on a new computer to have an old one that works just like it did before it started acting up. Or, yeah. So anyway, yeah, it's interesting.
Totally.
Weird dilemma. Thanks for sharing, Joe. Yeah, it's,
yeah.
Yeah, I don't know that I have any advice for it, but yeah, there we go. You want to take us to this, this Andy, I know you wanted to make sure we got to Andy. So I'm going to go ahead and read that for you here, Adam, as soon as I find it, but it's here. Andy says, I was stuck at the Apple store waiting for a Genius Bar appointment. So I asked about a Vision Pro demo, which they were happy to provide. I own and enjoy a MetaQuest 3, which I use mostly for exercise, but have played with other uses of. The AVP is clearly higher resolution, wider field of view, and seems better in pretty much every way, which of course it should be for $3,000 more. That said, I left the demo feeling the same as my reaction to the original announcement. It seems like an amazing solution, desperately hoping to find a problem. So I'm curious to hear your thoughts about this. Adam, do you use yours very much? If so, when and for what?
Yeah, I think this is a great question for a lot of people who are wondering about the Vision Pro. And I was happy that Andy asked me this because when I'm being honest, I said to him, your assessment is, I think, spot on. It's very quite right. I absolutely love my Vision Pro for the promise of what it will be someday, not so much as what it is today. And I knew this buying it. I knew that, here's the thing. I've been in the Apple community for, decades now, and I've never bought a bleeding edge product myself. When the first iPhone came out, I wasn't even going to get the first iPhone. I had a very generous listener who bought that for me, and they were expensive. Remember, $600-$700, right? I think. And then they dropped the price pretty quickly. But so I had the wherewithal. I had the opportunity. I wanted this experience. So I knew what I was buying. I knew I was spending crazy money on something that I'm probably not going to get a lot of use out of. And that was true for a lot of early Apple products too. Like this isn't anything new. But you're kind of paying to fund the future, I think, a little bit. I very firmly believe that the Apple Vision Pro is the best AR experience you can get. Now, I haven't tried a lot of other products, but I have used, Quest. I don't remember what version.
Sure.
At some point. And it was kind of this, it was in a lot of ways the same. It was a VR experience and people were playing games on it. And, that wasn't being used for a lot. This was a couple of years ago and I know things have changed, but I do think that Apple offers the best AR experience you can get out of any consumer device on the market right now. And I'll stand behind that. And it's because of the cost and what went into it and what's in it. You're not going to be able to match that at a $300 price. You can get very close, but there is a slight difference. Definitely I would say personal to answer the usage question. Yeah. I'm kind of using it I love it for watching movies. I think it's amazing movie watching experience. And that's probably the thing I do most with it. It's incredible. Outside of that, play around with a few games and try new things as they come out. But there's the problem. The rub right now is that there's a total lack of apps and developer support. And, it's a two-way street, cyclical thing, whatever you want to say, right?
Sure.
Until there's more devices out there, you're not going to have more developers making things for it. The reverse is also true, right? It's like they got to make more things for it so that more people want to buy them but Apple will get that figured out. And we've seen this over and over again. I mean, when the first iPhone came out, it didn't have apps. I think people forget that. Like there wasn't, other than what Apple gave you to do on it, there wasn't a lot to do on it until we had a robust developer community. So, you know, I have no doubt that this thing's going to get better. Apple's going to make cheaper versions. It's going to get in more consumers' hands. When that happens, more developers will jump on board. You know, it's all going to come eventually. So Apple Vision Pro 1.0, as it exists right now, is, you know, a consumer beta. It's a consumer beta device, and it's for early adopters and for people who want to mess around with this and developers who want to try to figure these things out. And it's going to take a few years, but as it gets more affordable and better, then, you know, it just like the iPod 1.0 versus what we had at the end, just like iPhone 1.0, iPad, Apple Watch, like there's a cycle to this.
I think, and I could be wrong, that in 15 years hence that this thing is going to be like the glasses that you and I are wearing, Adam. That
maybe. I don't know if you saw the new ones that Meta came out with. No. But they're getting a lot of controversy right now. Very, very cool. Yeah, the new Meta. I mean, they're not available to public, but they showed off their new, like, glasses. And a lot of tech reviewers have been able to try them, and it kind of shows the future. There's obviously security and privacy concerns about that sort of thing because they look like just glasses.
That ship has sailed.
Well, I mean, there's a whole etiquette and thing that
sure.
When we have those, what do you do when you need to use the restroom?
Yeah.
Do you take them off? You leave them on? Like,
right. Oh, no, I'm just saying that ship has sailed because whether you follow the etiquette or not, there are people who won't. And, you know, that's the world in which we are now find ourselves.
I see plenty of people in men's rooms right now with their iPhones in their hand the whole time.
Yeah. What are they doing?
And in the men's room, where is the camera aimed when you're just messing around on your phone while you're waiting for your business to finish? Right. I mean, like, So. But you're right.
That's sadly the world in which we live.
It is the world. The etiquette thing is something I occasionally think a lot about. I don't obsess about it, but when I'm presented with it, it's like, you know, I think I've said this before on this show, but I think about cars, right? When the first car, right now we have this whole robust system. I mean, we have roads, which, you know, we sort of had, but they were paths for things. But we have this robust system of laws and enforcement, and you have to get a license and all these things. That was absolutely not the case, 100% not the case, the day the first car came out, right? And so it evolved over time, as things do and as things are with the smartphone. Right. And if I think about the car, there are all the laws and there's all the things, but then there's also etiquette, and there's a merging of etiquette with laws. There's a codification of etiquette with laws. And what I'm thinking about with cars, or one of the things that I keep coming back to, is the four-way stop moment. Think about what happens at a four-way stop. Now, I know we're all trained to do it because it's been codified, and I think probably somewhere you could be, you know, cited with a violation if you do it wrong. But I know we can all complain that, oh, that idiot over there doesn't understand how a four-way stop works. And sure, but the number of collisions that don't happen at four-way stops tells me that even that idiot does understand what's happening here, even if they're not doing it the right way. And I'm using air quotes. And that took a while to get to the point where the four-way stop wasn't people getting out of their cars and like waving at each other and doing the thing, right? Like we came up with a thing and it's okay. The person to the right that gets there, if you get there at the same time, the person to your right goes first, and otherwise the person who gets there, like the whole thing that evolved into what we know it as today. Is it perfect? No, I don't think we've hit the four-way stop point with the etiquette of smartphones yet. So we're getting there, and it's getting better, but like that moment, even that moment hasn't yet happened, I don't think.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're figuring it out.
And we will. I mean, there's all sorts of things, right? But yeah, you know, I think you're right, Pete. I mean, that's the future that we're pushing towards for this kind of device. If society chooses that that's the next thing. I think the what's interesting about glasses and Vision Pro and all this other stuff is it seems like tech has decided that's the next thing that we're going to or right. want to go to. And then maybe after that, it's some sort of implant or something like that, I guess. I don't know that society will choose that ultimately. It's going to be very interesting. And I think we're at that point, right? Whereas like phones, when we went from, you know, cell phones to smartphones or whatever, that felt like it was more natural transition. It didn't have as many of these kinds of social roadblocks, I think. And again, you're right, Dave, there were those, though. I'm not saying they didn't exist, and we're slowly trying to figure them out. I think the biggest one, you know, hitting our society right now is just you know, you're out anywhere and nobody's talking to each other. They're just all looking at their phones. Like, that drives me batty, and I'm guilty of it too. I know I'm guilty of it.
And it doesn't just happen when we're out. Like Lisa right. and I have been, you know, we're navigating our way into this empty nest world. And like, you know, that's a change for us. It's the natural part of things, but it's a change regardless. And we've noticed that, oh, wait, if we're not intentional about this, we'll sit on the couch together at night, lost in our phones. And and it's easy for it to happen because sometimes I do need to do work on the couch, or sometimes she does need to do something. And so one of us will see the other, you know, buried in their device of choice and figure, okay, well, I don't want to interrupt them. I'll get buried in my device of choice. And suddenly 2 hours has gone by and it's like, well, I guess I'm going to go to bed, you know, and that's right. that's probably not the best thing for the next, you know, we're about to hit our 26th anniversary. Woo-hoo. And this coming week.
Congrats.
Thank you. Yeah. And it's probably not the best path forward for the next 26 years for us. Right. Like, so you're
not on a break, Dave?
We're not on a break. That's right. No, that's right. But our phones sometimes think we are. Right.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, there you go.
So I think we have to be in our house. We have to be intentional about it. And I think that's something that will probably start at home, like a lot of these things do, and then begin to spill over when we're all, you know, out in society, and we'll find some version of that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, I think Linus Tech Tips was talking about this, but you know, there's a lot of people that think the glasses are going to solve this problem. I'm a little bit leery about that because I have a feeling like you're going to look like you're, you know, connected, and you're really just, you know, parsing all the stuff that's flying by your eyeball. Right.
And if my wife thinks I'm listening to her now, right? Wait till I have a pair of those glasses on and I'm looking right at her and she's talking to me.
Well,
and I'm missing
and, you know,
all.
And another thing that came up, I think this came up on Linus Tech Tips too, because there was some university, I think, that took this technology and merged it with AI. Right. And it basically, you would look at somebody, it would scan their face, it would use AI and go out to the internet and just start grabbing all the information that it could find of that person and then just like present it to you. It's like where they live, who they are, their social media accounts, their blah, blah, blah. Like,
yep.
Terrifying.
I mean, that's handy.
Right.
At a conference. I would love that, but yeah.
Well, it's handy if it's grabbing that information from data that you've maybe put into your phone in your contacts app, right?
Yes.
It's not handy if it's like just people out in public who you don't know and it's just doing that.
Well, yeah. In fact, I'll tell you what, though, there's and I forget the name of it. There's a facial recognition program that the guy was just playing around with when he decided, you know, I want to learn how to do this. And now it's available mostly only to law enforcement, but if you're in the background of a photo that someone else took at a fair, they've caught wanted felons using, you know, this thing scans the internet and find, you know, Joe and Mary are out and they take a picture at a fair and you happen to be in the background and you're a wanted felon. They can pinpoint you were at that fair and they know what town you're in. And they've caught people doing this. It's like, oh my God, you know, it just.
I'll take it a step further because Meta made these glasses that we were showing off and talking about, right?
Yeah.
Now it's doing that for everybody that has a set of these glasses and sending all the data where.
Mm. Yep. And that's the end of the
including
the question.
Where that person was, where they were, all the people in a crowd, like.
Yeah, it's a brave new world, to quote somebody. You know, it'd be a good title for a book, maybe.
And you're right, Dave. I mean, there's absolutely going to have to be very much laws and codification and restrictions on what corporations can do with, because the data, I mean, we're already there with smartphones. It's just going to, when everybody's got a pair of glasses that has all these sensors and all this AI technology and all these, like, talk about Big Brother.
One thing,
talk about,
you
1984.
Know, well, and I mentioned on an episode a few weeks ago that one of the things I love to do is in the car is I use currently ChatGPT. Eventually, I'm assuming, you know, the S Lady integration will just let me do this, but I use the voice mode of ChatGPT's iPhone app to talk to it and ask it questions and have it teach me things while I'm driving, which is amazing. But sometimes it's like, hey, I'm having this little medical problem or whatever, you know, or a potential medical problem. Let's diagnose this together. Like, is this, you know, and I know how to parse this information as to, I think, as to whether or not it's time to call my doctor. But I just like to learn things. Or even if I was just at my doctor.
You may want to write your own prescription. Maybe, you're in Mexico,
I want to be a doctor. That's right. So, but anyway, like, I'm sharing private data with this thing. And I'm fully aware that this means it is no longer private, right? Like, there's a world.
Yeah.
However, we need a future where right now the data that is in our heads is protected. We cannot be compelled to share that data. I feel like we need laws to protect the data that we outsource from our head to a device. Because... Mm-hmm. These devices become the assistants to our brains. Like, I used to remember everyone's phone numbers. I don't have to anymore because I have a device. Now, whether somebody's phone number gets out there, like that might not be a big deal, or it might be, depending on whose phone number it is. But other things that I offload from my brain to my device for convenience need to be protected the same way. And that's just it's a big deal, I think, and a huge barrier to us really as a society embracing this, maybe, although clearly I'm embracing it even without that in place. But we need it, I think. But that's just part of this evolution. I don't know. We could go on like this forever.
I want to let me close it out then with the thought going back to your intersection mode. And that was actually in the early days, the theory was you sped through an intersection for less likelihood of a collision. And that's kind of where we are right now. I think we're speeding through the intersection until this gets codified. So
that's fair point.
Yeah. Reminds me of an old George Carlin bit, but you know, where he's like, he speeds through all the red lights and the person in the car is like, what are you doing? And he's like, oh, it's fine. My brother does this all the time. He has no trouble. And so he just speeds through the red lights, gets to a green light, and he slows down. The person's like, what are you doing? He's like, my brother might be coming the other way. So,
exactly.
You know,
well, at least you didn't go to the seven words you can't say on TV.
Could you say those on a podcast? I have a checkbox I could tick. We're not going to do
that. You could, but not this one.
Not this one. No. Can I... I know we're a little over, but I want to ask you the question that Zoe asked you pre-show, Adam, because I think this is timely and relevant and brings us back to tech tips before we actually close it out. Zoe asked, I am trying to do the iPhone mirroring and my MacBook is trying to connect to my old iPhone and not my new one. How do I fix this?
Yeah, I hit this exact problem when I upgraded finally my Mac to the new operating system, and it popped up and it said, hey, do you want to do, you know, the iPhone mirroring thing? Or there was a icon in my dock and I think I clicked it. But and it tried to connect to my old iPhone, which was way out sitting in my office. And I'm like, no, I don't want to do that. And I couldn't find an option to tell it something different. And I was like, how do I do this? So how you do it, folks, is you go into settings on Mac OS Sequoia or 15 or 16, What is the number?
macOS 15 is the one we're on.
15. Okay, I got it right.
Yep.
Then go into settings, desktop, and it's under desktop and dock. Really? And then down under a section called widgets, you should be able to see iPhone. And it says this iPhone will be used for iPhone mirroring and widgets. And if you have multiple iPhones connected to your iCloud, I'm assuming it's through iCloud, your iCloud account, then you can select which one will be the iPhone. I don't know why there's not a way to do it from the mirroring app. I think that's a little bit crazy, but
yeah,
it's buried in settings.
Okay. Well, thank you. I think that's good advice and a nice little treat for all of us that stuck around through our crazy little ramblings here. So,
yeah,
I know we don't do the crazy ramblings often, but sometimes they're good. And, you know, to me, that was one of the things I was kind of looking forward to when you came into the fold here, Adam, and essentially brought some elements of MacCast with you. And that's kind of one of them. So I like, yeah, it's good.
Yeah. It's a good conversation to have. We shouldn't be the only ones having it.
Right. Right. Yeah. Well, we need for everyone to be having it. It needs to be everyone. Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
It does.
Please remember to go to MacGeekab.com/giveaway. Eternal Storms is our giveaway partner for this month of October here, giving away copies of both Yoink and ScreenFloat. So MacGeekab.com/giveaway. Don't forget about that. Thanks to Eternal Storms for being our partner with that for this month. Thanks to CashFly for providing all the bandwidth to get the show from us to you. Thanks to all of you for listening. Thanks to all of you for sending in your tips, your questions. Thanks to everybody in the chat room at MacGeekGab.com/Discord or live.MacGeekGab.com. It's all the same place. Thanks to all of our premium supporters. Thanks. Thanks for listening. Really. Go check out Pete's other show. Yeah. So there I was. I have two other shows, Business Brain, Gig Gab for musicians. We have some cool interviews coming up. This week is a guy named Gary Burr, who has written number one hits for like Reba and Ringo. That's fascinating. And we have Buck Dharma from Blue Oyster Cult coming up too. I know.
Boom.
Yeah. It's fun stuff. We're doing good things. We're doing good things here. We're doing good things there. It's all happening. Adam, when you're out there doing good things, there's only one thing to worry about. What is that?
Don't get caught.
Couldn't have said it better myself. Thanks for listening, folks.
See ya.
Later.